Okay. So we're going to go to the afterburn now. If you have comments or questions, you can go ahead and line up. If you're on live stream, you can start typing them in. And it's so funny. I work hard to make sure I have plenty of notes to work with on a daily basis. And we only got through the first two references. Okay, which is no surprise. All right, Brianna, we'll start with you.
Okay, I kind of have like a long thought process. And I was going to ask a question.
Well, you're my daughter. That's no surprise.
I was going to ask kind of like, I feel like it's a pretty easy question, but right. I just couldn't wrap my head around it. And then I kind of think I figured it out myself, but I might be wrong. So.
All right, go ahead.
All right. So this whole theme of this to me is like talking about by their fruits, you shall know them, and like false teachers and all that kind of stuff that you're talking about. So by their fruits, you shall know them. And then you mentioned your fruit or your attitude is your fruit. And so I was thinking how you've talked about in the past many times, how churches will give the outward appearance of being blessed through miracles and little things that like it seems like it's good fruit, even though they are doing lawlessness, like it says in the verse 17, the rotten tree yields wicked fruit, although they show an appearance of having good fruit. So I was thinking, you know, why would Yahweh allow, you know, because he causes and allows, why would he allow for them to have the, not success, but I mean, sometimes they're pretty successful at what they're doing.
Sure.
Even though it's lawlessness and, you know, every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down. And so I was thinking, you know, this is very difficult for people walking into this and trying to figure things out because they are not doing what they're supposed to be doing, but yet they look like...
Right.
So I was going to say, like, why is Yahweh doing this? So then when we got to the verse about the house on the sand,
right,
it made me think about James 1,
mm-hmm.
about the man... Because you said the people who have multiple teachers in their head are going to be like the house built on the sand because they are kind of unstable,
right.
Indecisive. Same with the man in James 1. He is a double-minded man, and because of that, he's unstable, and he doubts and has, you know, he's shaken from the waves. And so...
Excellent connection.
Right, but then I went down to verse 13, which you talked about in your really old teaching, endure and receive the crown of life. And I see here I have a note that says he causes and allows. So then I started reading it, and it says, let no one say when he is enticed, I am enticed by Elohim, for Elohim is not enticed by evil matters, and he entices no one. So then I started thinking, and I could be wrong, but I was thinking with the good fruit, relating it to the good fruit, these people who are enticed or falling for the teachers who sound good and look good, yet are bearing rotten fruit, might be the ones saying, oh, well, I'm enticed by Elohim but they can't be enticed by Elohim if they're not called to the walk.
So what are they enticed by? Read verse 14.
Hold on. Hold on. So you can't be drawn away if you weren't on the path. And here it says, but each one is enticed when he's drawn away. And also in Matthew, it talked about the narrow path. And so you can't be drawn away unless you're walking on the path. So then I thought, okay, well, so the deception is for those who are called, because if you go further down these verses, it says it gives birth to sin. And we know from your sin teaching, you can't sin unless you know Torah and you have a relationship with it. So Abba is not allowing, or he's not causing people to get confused, or
nope.
He has no evil inclination. He's allowing us to make our own decisions. And that's why you talked about you need to vet your teachers. So the whole thing I got my head wrapped around is that we have the decision. He allows us, but he's not causing it. Because right here he says, and he entices no one. So the ones who don't have their bubble popped and they do fall for these teachers, they are not going to get the saying, depart from me because they don't even know him. Is that correct?
Awesome. Awesome.
Okay. That was a lot. Sorry.
No. Listen. And it said each one is enticed when he is drawn away by his own desires and trapped. Okay? Look, there are people that have left here for lots of different reasons. More often than not, they just don't like my personality or whatever. So they go someplace where they're getting their desire met, someone to be nice and gentle and talk soft and whatever. But then they're trapped. And they've trapped themselves. And so then they have to convince themselves to buy into whatever is coming from that microphone, you know? And that's where it becomes a trap. And so excellent job, Brianna, in putting that together. And I love that you brought James 1 into that. It was perfect. And it did talk about, very similarly, like the double-minded and the, like the waves of sea driven, tossed back and forth. There's lots of great parallels there that you connected. Very good. All right, Amy.
My first thought was that the fruit really doesn't fall far from the tree.
Oh, there you go. Well played.
Okay, so my understanding was like everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them shall be like a foolish man. Like, I'm not sure if that's exactly where it was, but you get the gist. So my thought was like when I was in the Baptist church, if you were going to do this, like without believing in the Messiah, if you're going to like live Torah or do this, you had to be perfect. So if you accepted him as your savior, then he would fix it for you somehow. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So anyway, I'm thinking like maybe if I remember right, in the medical profession, there's a Latin saying that says if the doctor tells you to do something, you're like, I did it because the doctor told me to do it. And so then you don't get in trouble. Is that right? Something like that.
I don't know if there's something like that in the medical profession, but
okay. So anyway,
there is something like that in the vertical structure.
Okay,
we talked about it last
night. That's what
it
reminded me of. That's why when you said that, it reminded me of that. So even though I've been on this walk for close to 10 years, I'm far from being an adult. And like when you were talking about your children, like they're not able to grasp Yahweh on the whole. So is it okay for me to just look at, like, watch you?
Sure. That's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, because
I'm saying, in other words, an anointed leadership person, if you don't have anybody else to look to, you should be looking for somebody to...
And so because teachers, I don't understand why the preachers and, like, in the churches, like, you get a double judgment for what you teach. And so if I'm doing what you tell me to do, will he hold that against me? Because you'll get the double judgment, but what will I get for being obedient to what you're telling us to do?
Probably well done, good and trustworthy servant. Because
even though it's wrong? What if you're teaching something that's wrong?
Well,
like the preachers.
The thing is, if you've done everything, I believe everything goes back to the same thing with Deuteronomy 8:2. In other words, if it's demonstrated in your heart that you made every effort, okay? Deuteronomy 8:2 is not about being perfect. It's about demonstrating that it's in your heart to make the effort. So, Amy, as long as you made the effort, you didn't just go to any teacher and say, well, this is the most convenient one, and then it'll be on him if he's wrong. No, you have to make the effort to find a right teacher. Look for the Ephesians 4:11, teacher, prophets, etc. Then when you believe you found one, if that turns out to be a problem, you are going to be found innocent because you made the effort the best you could, and that's now going to be on them, okay? But you still must make your effort. By the way, a lot of you made an effort and have already changed teachers 3 or 4 times because after making the effort and you got to learn enough, you realize that one's not it. You got to go to another one. So, but up to that point, if something were to have happened to you before you got that revelation that the person really wasn't, as long as you're making the effort... Abba's looking at the effort, not necessarily the effort is the result he's looking for. So it's not to say, I was about to say the effort, not the result, but the result he's looking for is the effort. Your desire and effort to do what's right, to understand what he wants, to find anointed teachers to teach you. Okay? Rebbe and Joanne.
Rabbi, when you was talking about the good soil and the bad soil, and then you started saying the gardener, it hit me. That what does the gardener do? The very first thing is he tests the soil to see what the pH level is. And I was thinking about Yahweh being the gardener, and he's testing everybody to see what their pH is. And so when we don't know what it is, then we have to go for counseling to find out what it is, what we need to change, what we got to do. That just hit me. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. Very nice. Appreciate that. Excellent job. I'm trying to figure out how it's 5:25, how to balance out that we've got like 5-6 more people to go and the live stream got left out last night. You guys might end up getting left out again. I apologize. The solution, of course, always is to move here. Well, that made Ashley change her mind. Okay, Daphne?
That was wild. All of a sudden, a big swath opened up. Okay, so in Matthew 13 about the good soil, it says, "And that sown on the good soil is he who hears the word and understands it, indeed bears fruit and yields some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. That reminded me of the parable of the talents from last time. And I'm wondering, is that connected? Is that like basically the same?
Same thing.
Same people?
Same thing. But you know what? This is why I like the afterburns, because you brought up a verse and a word that came up in that sentence. I didn't clarify. I got an insight. Okay, it says, he who hears the word and understands it. The key here is that it's actually that you understand it, not that you think you understand it. Because a lot of stuff you thought you understood and ended up being wrong. So this 100-fold, 60-fold, etc., is for those who, basically when it says he heard the word and you actually correctly understand it, which, by the way, requires a teacher. That's scriptural. You could say it requires the Ruach. It requires both. The Ruach is not going to go and reveal all this stuff to you without a teacher to help you understand it. Okay? That's scriptural. Go listen to the teaching called Learn and Teach the Torah, which is not a case for you to learn and teach it, but a case for teachers teaching it. Okay?
All right. And just to clarify also, so with the talents, all of the people that did the talents, even the one that didn't do anything with it,
right.
And all the soil, even the wayside and the rocky, they're all bubble popped people?
I'm not so sure about the wayside, only because as you're throwing seed out there, this is more talking about, the teacher throwing out seed into a field, so to speak. And we see the same thing with the darnel and the wheat. When you throw out some of that seed is going to go on people that aren't bubble popped, okay? And they're going to hear it, and they'll show maybe a little curiosity and interest just because on their human level they show curiosity and interest, but they're not actually bubble popped. All right, so I think that first ground may be in the effort to get seed to everybody. Some of it's just falling on wayside, and the people are not even ready for that. Okay? Del?
Do I count as live stream because I'm normally, so they would kind of...
Del lives down below Macon, so, but you're here now, so you just go ahead here.
Okay, so my whole question or my whole statement based on when you did say that good is Torah. Is that correct?
That's an element of it. All that is good comes from the above. Torah comes from above.
So when those who received his teaching and act on that shall have more revealed to them, that's where he who possesses to him shall be given, and to he shall have overflowingly. So let me back up. When those who have received his teachings and act on that shall have more revealed to them, and so that they have more, and those who have not received his teachings, even what they have received, will that be taken away? The amount of effort that you put into understanding and doing will be reflected in the amount of fruit you show. And the fruit, good fruit, being the fruit that has Torah in order to be good. It has to have Torah, which is Yeshua. So the more good fruit that you have, the more Yeshua-like you will be.
Yes.
And
yes. And wait, let me just interrupt to say this. Let's make sure for everybody, I don't know what you heard in church, but when it talks about possessing and hundredfold, none of this has to do with money. Okay, this has to do with the secrets of the kingdom. Okay? The abundance, a hundredfold and all these other things have to do with kingdom stuff, not personal wealth and other things, which is what the church has turned it into, okay? Because remember, he says, because it has been given to you to know the secrets, then he says, whoever possesses. Okay, so this has to do with information revealed and then you applying that information in your becoming a good and trustworthy servant, not in you becoming whatever secular, worldly, fleshly, wealthy thing, whatever. Okay?
Okay, and so pressing on, so the good soil would be the soil that has Torah in it in order for it to be good. And so if we have Torah mixed into the soil, or Yeshua mixed into the soil, then we will bear that 100-fold, 60-fold, and 30-fold, the more that we have Yeshua or Torah mixed into our soil?
Well, no, I mean, yes and no. Okay, yes, that's correct, but I'm going to say the good soil is good because with the inspiration of the bubble pop, you've cleared out the thorns and the rocks. So it's not that Torah is in the soil first. Torah can come into the soil because in your actively asking, seeking, knocking, and pursuing that relationship, you've cleared a way to make the soil able to receive. Okay? All right. Melissa.
Thank you for this teaching, because when you first started talking, I was trying to say, how do I evaluate myself where I am? And then when you said clearing out the rocks and getting self out of the way, I realized that for me, I'm right getting myself out of the way. And sometimes life is a whirlwind between trying to find a balance between the world and working and coming. And so, and I realized last week when I understood finally the oil for the lamps for the virgin is doing your works, you know. And so then I try to pray and ask Yahweh. I read the word every morning first and try to see myself. But I'm still wondering, can you give us a little bit more information about how we can get ourselves out of the way? And, you know, I know it's dying to yourself. And I wish I had a spiritual report card every month, and that would help, you know. So
you get like a spiritual report card saying, okay, you're doing well here, needs improvement here.
D minus
over there. Okay, yeah. All right. Okay, to answer your question, there's probably two aspects to this. One is that I haven't mentioned this in a long time, but I've talked to you guys about this before, this increasing this level of awareness of yourself. I used to call it hyper-vigilant awareness. You have to be really aware of yourself. The more you're not just going through life, but you're watching yourself going through life, the more you'll catch the areas that need improvement. The other thing is, if you're not sure how to get yourself out of the way so much, but you know the area that you're struggling in, that's when you come and get counsel. And say, I'm realizing I'm having a problem over here, I just don't know how to fix it. So that's the two areas. One is, you have to be much more aware so you know where your problems are. Some of those, you may have solutions that will come to you that will work just fine. Other areas, you may need counsel, okay? All right, Rob, we'll try to get a few in. Shamish Rob.
Okay, from Jot Weissman, it says, Shabbat Shalom, Rabbi. Question, Matthew 7, verse 6. Is this verse why Christians struggle dealing with messianics? When we attempt to walk out a life in line with Torah/Yeshua, they often get violent towards us.
No, okay? Look. Use the actual parable or metaphor that I've given you, which is the bubble, right? So what do I always tell you the bubble is? It's a delusion bubble. So what is a delusion? It's seeing the world in a way that it isn't, but it looks real to you. It's your worldview, the way you see, or an area of the world, the way you see health, the way you see politics, the way you see spiritual stuff, right? That area is your worldview. Okay, now, why do you think the Democrats and Republicans have such a problem? Or go into any country, the two major parties. Because their worldviews are so opposing that your worldview is a threat to my worldview. So when you go to a Christian and you're now going to keep commandments, you actually are a threat to their delusion bubble. Because if you're right, by definition, they're wrong. And that often gets a strong reaction. I think, and Janet can tell me, but I think clinically, a very common response to a threatened delusion is violence, okay? Verbal or physical, or some combination. So why is it surprising that when you go to your Christian friends and you get excited about this stuff, why are you surprised when you get a somewhat violent response? Not usually physical, but usually vocal. You get attacked viciously and loudly sometimes, right? Okay, So it's not so much about what's in verse 7, chapter 7 and 6, which is the casting the pearls to swine. That's not the problem, because they'll just trample on the pearls. And when you go to your Christian friends, they're trampling on you. They don't care about the pearls. It's because you are an actual existential threat to their delusion bubble. Okay, you're threatening because they know, not maybe consciously, they know if you're right, they're wrong. And if they're wrong, they have to change. They don't want to change because they already think they're right. Okay? Which is why you can't have an argument about anything with somebody who's emotionally invested. Okay? You got people that are more conservative or more liberal, that's fine. But if they identify as, you know, emotionally as liberal or conservative, and then they talk to each other, each one is a threat to the other one's worldview. So they have to get strong. So it depends on how emotionally invested you are. Okay, I'm not emotionally invested in any politics. So if you're on the other side, I may just think you're an idiot, but I'm not going to get, that wasn't meant to be a joke. I mean, I may just think you're whatever, but I'm not going to care to get that involved because you're not a threat to me because I'm not emotionally invested, okay? And I'm also not emotionally invested in my Torah observing. You're not a threat to that either because I'm much more solid than an emotional investment. I am invested. You can't shake that. You can't get me upset about it. Okay, next question.
Okay, from ZemFems, Anthony. Can a quote-unquote wheat become a darnel or a darnel become a wheat? Do the darnels know they are darnel or vice versa?
All right, thank you, Anthony. Okay, Anthony's up in Alberta. Okay, so the answer, we'll take the first part. A darnel is a darnel. A darnel may think it's a wheat, may actually look like a wheat. Remember, the father knows the end from the beginning, so it just takes time to mature and become what it is. Okay? I mean, it may actually believe it's a wheat in the beginning and actually be doing very wheat-like things until some of the other stuff that comes up leads it either, I would say, either its own desires, which would be like the thorny ground, or the rocky stuff that, you know, kind of, you know, did I get the backwards? Give me a second here. I want to make sure I'm giving you the right metaphor from the chapter. Okay? Yeah, okay? So, you know, it's you know, the rocky stuff is the outside stuff, okay? And the thorny stuff is the inside stuff. So then the wheat realizes it's a darnel. But it doesn't actually think of it that way. It thinks I'm just going to be a wheat going over here doing part of this or spinning it into my version of what Yah wants. And then we use words like, well, he knows my heart, or I'm sure he's okay with this. He knows my struggle. Oh, those words sound so nice, and they're such garbage, okay? It's going to just get you in the fire, so to speak, okay? It just is. I'm going to be blunt with you guys. So first question answer is, no, a wheat doesn't become a darnel. It just doesn't know what it is in the beginning. In the beginning stages, they both look the same. Second question, do darnels know that they are darnels? Probably not. That's kind of the whole reason why the reapers have to come in. They think they're wheat. Okay? All right, next.
Okay, another one. Scott Anderson, another one from Matthew 7, verse 6. Is this an example of why we shouldn't attempt to persuade others online in chat forums or Facebook posts? Like you said many times before, Yah doesn't need us to defend him.
That would be a piece of that, yes. It's not the end all be all, but it is one of the reasons not to do that, right? Casting your pearls to someone who just can't appreciate it, won't do anything with it. The other reason that you don't do these things is because you could get undue violent reactions that you don't need for no reason. It's really, look, I want you all to think much more red, okay? Red meaning the personality style stuff, which means that you should always be looking at outcome before you do something. Okay? So when people ask me, well, I was thinking of doing this, and I would always say, okay, why were you doing it? What outcome were you looking for? And then I ask, what is the likely outcome you're going to get? Is it what you're looking for? Because you guys want to make posts thinking you're going to convince everybody of something when the most likely outcome is that you're going to convince nobody and get some haters. So what was the point? Okay? And so some of you guys go, well, then why do you do this? Because I throw this out there so that it's getting the darnel and the wheat and that those who are supposed to find it will find it. But I'm not going to go make posts, you know, trying to, you know, like as an individual person, I'm a teacher, so people understand I'm throwing this teaching out there as a teacher. And I got haters, plenty of haters. Elder gets emails from haters every day, probably. Okay? He doesn't tell me them all, but, you know, they come. And the only reason he doesn't tell me is because he knows I don't care. Okay? So he doesn't want to waste my time because I'm not going to get upset anyway. I don't care. But the thing is, all right, it's just a piece of it. One of the reasons you don't just vomit everything that you're excited about Torah-wise is because unless the person's ready to receive it, what was the point? You're not doing anybody any favors. You're not helping anything. You're probably going to create a conflict. Okay, because a lot of people will ask me all the time, well, how many people have you brought to Messiah? So through the teachings, who knows, whatever. I don't think I bring anybody. He brings everybody, and then they find me later. Okay? It's not our job to bring anybody to Messiah. It says none comes as the Father draws them. So we got to get that out of there first. But the thing is, I will always have a conversation. Well, let me say this differently. I don't almost ever have a conversation with anybody about this that they don't initiate. I don't look for opportunities to preach the gospel and blah, blah, blah. Because 99% of people I'm talking to is just going to end up in an argument or a fight or some other nonsense. Okay? They're not ready for this. So if the conversation starts looking like that may be what's going on, that I'll ask them a simple question. How's your walk? I mean, how are you happy in your walk? And if they say, oh, I'm walking in favor, and I'm just great, my church is awesome, I'm like, that's great. What else am I going to say? They are not ready for my conversation. But I want to find out, kind of like what Rebbetzin Joanne said. Excellent point, Rebbetzin Joanne. I want to check the soil and see the pH and everything else, right? And so if they're very, very ingrained and already happy, what they're not going to listen to me. You know who finds us? Unhappy people that realize that something's missing or something's wrong. They're looking, they're seeking, they're knocking because they're disturbed in their peace. The Father pops the bubble. That's what's called disturbing your peace. He's like, I'm about to send your world into a spin. Boom. Okay? You guys know what I'm talking about because some of you are still dizzy from the spin he put you through. All right? That person then will find me. I don't go looking for them. Okay? But you have to understand, your role is similar in that once you study, remember the teachings are designed to do four things. Understand it, do it, defend it, teach it. When if you're well prepared, he can draw somebody to you who is ready and you can maybe share something. What you should do first, though, out of the safety net of like, you know, what Amy was talking about, hey, if it's you, then I'm not guilty type of thing. If I teach somebody wrong, send them to me. Send them to the teachings. If anybody asks you a question, you want to know one of the best ways to see how serious they are? Now, wait. You need to know whether they're asking the question because they want to know what you think or because they want the answer. Because they could be wanting one of those two things. The way you test it is say, if they really want the answer, say, I have a teacher that has the answer. Go listen to this teaching. If that's what they want, they'll go listen. If they don't go listen, that's because they really didn't want that. They were trying to poke you. Because then they ask you a question, you answer the question, it gives them fuel for their next attack. Okay? And you play the game and fall right into that trap. Okay? You fly right into it headlong. Person asks you a question, well, what do you believe about this? And they just wanted to set you up for whatever Paul attack they're going to give you. Okay? Because they're going to smack you with Galatians or Corinthians or Ephesians or Colossians or something, right? Romans Road, whatever. I've never found it. I looked for it. There's no Romans Road. Okay. So, if anything, it has Romans on it. So you wouldn't want to do that anyway. Okay? So, don't play that game. Don't fall into the trap. Because some of you feel like, well, I have to answer them. No, you don't. Because really, are you really qualified to answer them anyway? I'm not trying to be insulting, but are you? At this point? Yet? You know? Why wouldn't you just say, here, this is the website that, you know, just look this up. The teaching's called this. And then go listen to that. I'll send you a link. I'll send you a link. Okay? And if they're serious, which 99% of the time they won't be, they'll listen to the teaching. It's a great sort of tester to see where it test the level of interest, right? But you get so excited somebody asked you a question. But be excited to point them to the teacher. Let the hard work that's already been done handle it all. Because you know what's going to happen is at some point, you will cause damage because they'll ask you a question you can't answer. You're going to look bad, make him look bad, like make the teacher look bad, and the person's going to get disillusioned and leave. Okay? Because maybe you do well up to a point, but what if they ask a question you can't answer? Or what if you answer it a way you thought was right, but you were wrong? Now the double judgment's on you. Go to the safety net, just pass them to the teacher. That's all. That's the best way to go. I hear elder all the time counseling, and a lot of times he says, Rabbi says this, Rabbi said that, and didn't Rabbi say this? Okay? The safe way to go. And he says, did you listen to that teaching yet? And go to the teaching. By the way, when people come to me, I send them to the teaching. If there's a teaching, I send them to the teaching. I may answer the question or not, but most of the time, unless it's some urgent thing, I'll say, you need to go listen to the teaching. Then call me back if you still have questions, right? Go listen to. I do that. So if I won't answer the question, why are you answering the question? And I'm the teacher. And I won't even answer the question most of the time. If there's a teaching, go to the teacher. Go listen to the teaching. It's the most thorough way to get the answer anyway. Okay? If you know I took 17 parts to answer their question, what are you going to do in a five-minute conversation? I mean, how is that going to work? I took 17 hours to make that answer so that you understand it, you're defending it, you're doing it, you know, the whole thing. Like, you have everything you need. So you're going to do that in 5 minutes? I don't do that if I know I can't do it in 5 minutes. I was to say, it would not be fair to you to try to answer that in 5 minutes because it's going to trigger too many confusing things. Go listen to the teaching, then call me back, if you still need to. Most of the time, they're like, teaching answered it. Okay? Next. I know we're running late, but I skipped out on the live streamers last night because of the Zone 3, so.
This probably the last really
good,
kind of relevant one. Yanni, she says, I have to make an effort to find the teacher. I don't feel I did the effort. Abba put me in MTOI, so maybe not everyone has to make the effort.
Well, it's not just about, no, I'm not saying like it's an arduous task, okay? When you find a teacher, you have to be vetting by listening to the teachings, reading your word, and praying. That's where the Ruach comes in. Is this correct? Is this right? And you have to also be careful to make sure there's no I preferences as to why you like what you're hearing. Because that's how you can end up in a place that's tickling your ear. Okay? You have to like what you're hearing because you like that it's right, not because it agrees with you. Okay? You got to like what you're hearing because you hear him out of the teacher. Okay? It should be like we read at the end of the chapter in chapter 7. He sounded like somebody a little different. He possessed authority that was not like the regular guys, the scribes, etc. So that doesn't mean it's an arduous task, although some of you went through a lot of people to find this. So for some people, it can be a pretty arduous task. So Yanni, just be praised and praise Yah. You didn't have to put that much into it. That can happen, okay? It's a blessing when that happens. It's easier. But I know that you, because you've asked a lot of questions of me over the years, we know each other a long time now. You have vetted. You've asked questions. You've gotten answers. You didn't just buy in hook, line, and sinker, say, well, Abba put me here, okay? And so just realize that. But the majority of people find this ministry after they've been through others, which prepares them, I guess, more for this in some way, okay? Because that seems to be the common path. Not a whole lot of people find me first from church. Church, to me, is a hard jump, okay? All right? All right. So, you know, I don't recommend the path through the other ministries, but it just seems to be the common way that it goes. Okay. All right, that was it, Rob? All right. Well, thank you, everyone. Excellent.